Hello, this is Bobby Hardy with the commercial news for Friday, April 3rd. The title story is County Sees Fourth COVID-19 Cases. The Vermilion County now has four COVID-19 positive cases. The two the Vermilion County Health Department learned about Thursday are both in their 30s and neither has required hospitalization. One had a nasal specimen collected in a Vermilion County facility, and the other had a nasal specimen collected in a Champaign County facility. Doug Toole, public health administrator with the Vermilion County Health Department, said they were just beginning interviews with the two new patients. Despite their ages, it doesn't initially appear that any of the four Vermilion County cases are connected. Only the first case was hospitalized in Champaign County, a resident in their 20s. The second case of another person in their 20s was confirmed Wednesday. Health department officials ask residents to continue to be vigilant, practice social distancing, stay home unless necessary to leave, and wash hands and clean common surfaces frequently. According to a cell phone study of people staying home, Vermilion County residents aren't doing their part, and the health department also reported. A social distancing scoreboard by a data company at https://www.unicast.com/COVID-19/social distancing scoreboard shows Vermilion County has a letter grade D for human mobility based on cell phone location data. Data based on distance traveled for people walking, running, or driving is then categorized. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced Thursday 715 new cases of coronavirus disease, COVID-19, in Illinois, including 16 additional deaths. Currently, IDPH is reporting a total of 7,695 cases, including 157 deaths in 61 counties in Illinois. The age of cases range from younger than 1 year old to older than 100 years old. We'll move on to the next cover story, movie of your choice. Fisker offers unique date night raffle. This is out of Danville. Single people and couples can only dream about the next normal date nights after the coronavirus pandemic subsides. Fisker Theater officials are helping out that dream. A raffle is now taking place to win the opportunity of, quote, once-in-a-lifetime date nights, unquote, at the theater in downtown Danville. The theater, like our entire community, is absolutely being negatively impacted by the challenges we face as we do everything we can to stop the spread of the COVID-19 virus. It is times like this that can make or break an organization, especially one that just relocated about 6 months ago, according to Jason Rome, executive director of the Fisker Theater. So we know we needed to get creative, and this raffle is a great combination of raising funds for the theater as well as continuing to showcase it and provide access to the community as soon as we can get back to hosting the community in a safe way, Rome said. The public can purchase raffle tickets for two chances to have their name drawn. Chances are $20 each, or $3 for $50, or $5 for $80, or $10 for $150. The winners will be able to choose a companion to have a private date night at the Fisker with a movie showing of their choice. All concessions, including beer, wine, soda, popcorn, etc., are complimentary. All chances are available for sale online to help keep everyone socially distanced and to remove the desire for people to gather to sell physical tickets in our current situation. Winners will be drawn live via Facebook live stream at the end of the raffle. Also, they are offering the same experience to acquire in a buy it now style that will have no impact on the raffle itself, but will allow generous and motivated donors to snatch the same experience for themselves at a plus one for a $1,000 donation. We hope that this raffle can help the theater raise a bit of money, provide a unique once-in-a-lifetime experience for some folks, and just generally bring some excitement and good cheer to the community at this time. There's a link to the Facebook event. The raffle ends at 6 p.m. April 9th, with the winners drawn at 7 p.m. April 9th. Rome said they continue to pursue events and programming for the remainder of the year for the Fisker, as well as into 2021. Conversations are being had, offers discussed and negotiated, contracts being presented, he said. But it's all with a cautious outlook for the near term and excitement for the back end of the year. As soon as we are able to get up and running again, the doors will be open and the lights will be on. You can expect more classic films. We can get films up and going almost immediately, and live entertainment that spans the genres of music, theater, and more, from local, national, and international artists, just as soon as it is safe for our community to come together and celebrate the arts, Rome said. In other theater news, the Fisker has another staff member. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation announced the addition of Ashton Greer to the professional staff of the Historic Theater. Greer joins Rome as the operations director of the theater and marks the second staff position created at the Fisker since its restoration and grand reopening in September 2019. Greer comes to the Vermilion Heritage Foundation after having most recently served as the Community Health Program Manager at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, where she focused on creating and leading programs which identified and addressed the health needs of the community. In addition, Greer developed expertise in project management, large and small event planning and execution, volunteer development, and fundraising. Residing in Danville with her husband and three children, Greer is an active member of the community. I believe that the Fisker Theater has the potential to drastically change the culture and economic situation in the downtown Danville community. It has always been important to me to not work just for the sake of making a living, but to work for the sake of making a difference, she said. Greer is starting on a part-time basis and will transition to full-time at a later date. Rome said her duties will be to focus on specific areas of operations that are impacted most by the theater's current and future growth. There will be quite a lot of overlap in what we each focus on in our roles at the Fisker. Ashton will have a leadership role in areas like volunteer concessions and box office management, as well as further developing our private events business, weddings, and other private parties that soon will be available to the public, according to Rome. The Fisker Theater, 158 North Vermilion Street, was built in 1884 as the Grand Opera House and operated as a performing arts venue and later a movie house until the mid-1980s. The building is owned and operated by the Vermilion Heritage Foundation. Thanks to the generosity of Julius W. Hegliner II, the Fisker reopened as a renovated performing arts center to a sold-out crowd for a concert by the Letterman in the fall of 2019 and has since hosted live events, film presentations, public speakers, and private events. Fisker Theater events provide an entertainment and exposure to the arts for area students, a draw for tourism, and the overall economic development of downtown Danville area, as well as generating funds for additional needed equipment and ongoing improvements to the building. On to our third cover story. Downtown Easter events canceled, summer sounds still in plans. It's out of Danville. This weekend's downtown First Friday event featuring the Easter Bunny and Easter Bonnet Parade has been canceled due to the coronavirus, but Downtown Danville Inc. officials are hopeful for summer sounds and other later year events. We've not canceled at this point, said DDI Board President Amy McKinley about the free outdoor summer concerts downtown. We're just so hopeful we can make it happen. McKinley said the board is trying to come up with some creative ideas to fund it. Everyone recognizes it's hard to ask for sponsors with businesses struggling right now. She said Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. has agreed the board can use First Friday funds not expended because of the weather and the coronavirus towards summer sounds. DDI would match that amount, she said, adding that DDI also would cooperate with and find ways to involve downtown businesses. We're hopeful we can bring it back. It could be a shortened season, she said. We're working really hard to make it happen. DDI also hopes to continue First Friday events. While many downtown businesses are closed right now, some are finding unique ways to still reach their customers and stay afloat. For example, Cafe 13 has expanded its bakery menu and is trying to accommodate catering customers. Sweet Repeats is closed, but is staying in touch with customers through social media and selling items such as chalk paint for at-home projects through curbside pickup. You just can't go dark in times like this, she said, about continuing those connections with customers. McKinley Senior Source is offering affordable training to businesses to help them get set up for Zoom video conferencing and other ways to stay in touch with clients and customers. She said they have to do that for their clients too. Newer business Vermilion River Beer Co. also is selling t-shirts and working with other businesses. The Illinois Small Business Development Center and Danville Area Community College also can help small Vermilion County businesses with business assistance programs. Director Carol Nichols can be reached at 217-474-2028 or cbdc@dacc.edu. We'll move on to the obituaries. Marlene Bailey. Marlene Bailey, 84, of Hoopston, passed away at 7:58 p.m. Tuesday, March 31st, 2020, at her home. Due to the current health concerns, private family services will be held with the Celebration of Life service at a later date. She will be laid to rest in Floral Hill Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. Paul M. Wright, retired Circuit Court Judge Paul M. Wright, 92, of Lakewood Ranch, Florida, died peacefully on Monday, March 23, 2020, after an extended illness. A Celebration of Life memorial service will be in Montgomery, Alabama, on a date to be determined. Tentative graveside services will be at Sunset Funeral Home in Danville on a date to be determined. Nancy Moore. Nancy J. Starsky Moore passed on March 30, 2020, at the age of 75 in her adopted home of Grays Lake. A private service will be held on Friday, April 3, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, with Pastor Dave Anderson officiating. She will be laid to rest at the Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Erwin Johannes. Ernie Johannes died March 31, 2020. A Celebration of Life will be held at the Covington United Methodist Church in Covington, Indiana, at a later date. Burial will be at Waltham Cemetery, Utica, Illinois. Carl Hoopston has plans to deal with virus. This is out of Hoopston. Is Carl Hoopston Regional Health Center prepared for the COVID-19 virus? That question is on the minds of the Hoopston Council members, Fire and Police Departments, EMA, and Mayor Bill Crusenberry. Now it's even more on the minds of everyone in Vermilion County, including Hoopston, since Doug Toole, Vermilion County Public Health Administrator, announced Tuesday that Vermilion County had its first COVID-19 case, a count that had reached 4 by Thursday afternoon. Heather Tucker, Hoopston Regional Administrator, said the Carl Hospitals have been preparing for COVID-19 since January. The hospital is in constant contact with area communities, she said, and the Vermilion County Health Department, the CDC, the regional EMA, and the Illinois Department of Health. Also, she said, the hospital staff is receiving education and training drills in preparation for potential cases in Hoopston, repurposing staff to ensure there is enough staff to meet the needs and provide care safely, making sure supplies are available, especially vents, PPE, gowns, hand sanitizer, and testing equipment. More equipment is being ordered in preparation. There are extra beds, Tucker said, now that the critical care hospital 25-bed restriction was lifted, which can double or triple the number of beds that can be provided in Hoopston. When asked about a plan that could be shared with the media, Jamie Mullen, senior corporate communications partner, said that Carl does not share its plan. Since Carl reassesses daily, it has an A plan and contingency plans of B, C, D, E, and F. Mullen added Carl has started to process approved COVID-19 tests locally, cutting the wait time for results from as long as 10 days to 24 hours. This means faster results for patients here and other locations, reducing strain on state and commercial labs. On-site processing allows us to expand our testing to healthcare workers with symptoms, helping keep our patients and the community as safe as possible. The process that is helping reduce testing time, according to Mullins, is a partnership with the University of Illinois and its veterinary diagnostic lab. About 100 tests can be done a day with a department's lab equipment with a 24-hour turnaround, Kyla Banks, Carl's vice president, said in a statement. The criteria for who is tested are still the same following the CDC and IDPH guidelines, Mullins said. The guidelines are to seek medical care right away if you have a fever, dry cough, or difficulty breathing, recently traveled to the affected areas, or been around someone suspected of having or confirmed to have COVID-19. We've taken a number of steps to prepare already, including setting up screening stations, Mullen said, postponing appointments that are critically safe to do so, and providing patients with a 24-hour hotline and assessment tools to help them get their COVID-19 questions answered. Carl constantly works to be as prepared as possible, Mullen said. While scenarios are always unique, it is our obligation to work every day to be ready for whatever our community needs. Mullen did stress that 80% of the cases recover at home, while 20% will need care at hospitals. Not everyone will need hospital, she emphasized. Tucker added that she would be happy to talk with the city officials about COVID-19 plans, saying the door is open for communications with the city. There are a few ways the community can help address COVID-19. Stay home, give blood if possible, make a donation, or consider making masks for non-clinicians. We'll move on to the community briefs. Danville, food distribution. Eastern Illinois Food Bank is distributing food to area families struggling with food insecurity. The drive-through distribution will be held from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday at 1803 Georgetown Road across from Casey's. All Vermilion County residents who meet income eligibility criteria are welcome. The distribution is part of the food bank's response to the COVID-19 pandemic as a way to bring supplemental food to areas of chronic or extreme need. In compliance with CDC guidelines, clients will remain in their cars and boxes of food will be loaded into their vehicle by volunteers. Clients should clear space in their trunk or back seat prior to arriving at the distribution to prevent contact. To be eligible, a household must have an income at or below 185% of the federal poverty line, or approximately $3,970 per month for a family of four. Learn more at www.eiufoodbank.org/news. DAR cancels meeting. The Governor Bradford chapter of NSDAR has canceled its monthly chapter meeting on April 7th. Out of Covington, Indiana, show postponed. Due to the COVID-19 outbreak, the Beef House Dinner Theater has rescheduled Kirby and Clark Classic Country Duets to September 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th. For more information, visit https://beefhouserolls.com/theater. We'll move on to a story from the sports section. IHSAA cancels spring sports. Holcomb announcement end season. North Vermilion Athletics Director Martin Brown had been working on schedules for a possible spring season. On Thursday, the possibility of a spring season was done for good. After an announcement from Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb that schools in Indiana would be closed for the rest of the school year, the IHSAA announced the cancellation of all spring sports. I had been working on schedules every 2 weeks, Brown said. It was something that I was working on with other schools in the Wabash River Conference, but today was the final chapter. On March 19th, the IHSAA announced it was going to wait until May 1st to try to start a shortened spring season after canceling the IHSAA basketball tournaments. On March 18th, Covington softball coach Ryan Sowers was meeting with his team before the start of the season. We had a team meeting and we were discussing the practice schedule, but the next day they announced everything was moved to May 1st. We told the players to focus on catching and running and sent us updates, and we were starting to hope, but the sickness here increased. Sauer said the Trojans had potential to compete in the WRC. We had four senior starters and one new senior, so everyone was excited because we had good players and senior leadership, Sauer said. We had 58-90% participation in early workouts, so it was a big heartbreak for us that we couldn't have a chance to see what we could do. Sowers was also an assistant to the Covington boys basketball team, who won a sectional title before the rest of postseason play was canceled. Coach Adam Bullard asked me to sit on the bench, and it was great to see them beat Lafayette Central Catholic in the first game and then winning the title, Sowers said. We had a great chance in the regional, but then it didn't happen. We talk a lot about saying that the next game could be the last game you play, and for those guys, it was their last game. It's hard to see them not finish the season and not play in the spring season. Suit seeks Illinois inmate release due to coronavirus. This is out of Chicago. A federal lawsuit filed Thursday in Chicago seeks an order directing state officials to drastically reduce Illinois' prison population on grounds that hundreds of inmates are particularly vulnerable to catching and dying from the coronavirus. The lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court names 10 inmates but seeks class action status to represent older prisoners and those with underlying health conditions, saying that poor medical care and a lack of preventative measures behind bars in Illinois make the COVID-19 virus especially deadly. The state is not acting with sufficient urgency, and without intervention from this court, people are going to die unnecessarily, it says. It adds, Illinois prisons are on the cusp of an outbreak, but there is still time for urgent and decisive action that can prevent harm. An ESO Thursday, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot announced that one of the city's police officers died of the virus. She said that 50-year-old Marco DeFranco was with the department for 21 years. The new coronavirus cases, mild or moderate symptoms for most people, but for some, especially older people and adults with existing health problems, can cause more serious illness or death. The Thursday lawsuit says the risks aren't limited to some 37,000 prisoners in 28 prisons. Without urgent action by the governor and the Illinois Department of Corrections to drastically reduce Illinois' prison population, the novel coronavirus is likely to spread not just inside the walls of Illinois' 28 prisons, but throughout prison communities as well. The kind of social distancing that helps slow transmission of the virus is impossible in prison, with prisoners crowded into small cells, as well as sharing showers and toilets, the suit says. It says a lack of masks, gloves, and other protective equipment for guards adds to the hazards. According to the filing, more than 50 Illinois prisoners have tested positive for the coronavirus, with the actual number of infected likely far higher. Lawyers of civil rights groups filed a 48-page lawsuit. It names Governor J.B. Pritzker and the director of the Illinois Department of Corrections, Rob Jeffries, as defendants. A message seeking comment from the Corrections Department wasn't immediately returned. The lawsuit asked the court to order the immediate medical furlough of some prisoners and the transfer to home detention of others, including those 55 and older, with less than a year left on their sentences. It argues that the sickness many prisoners would face violates constitutional protection against cruel and unusual punishment. Meanwhile, the Illinois Health Department reported 7,695 cases of COVID-19 in 61 counties. Cook County, including Chicago, had 5,575 cases, or 72%. There have been 157 deaths in Illinois. Chicago's interim police superintendent Charlie Beck said it's not clear how DeFranco, who worked in narcotics, became infected. He became ill last week. Police departments across the country have reported an increasing number of cases among their employees in recent days, and leaders have tried various strategies to limit officers' exposures as they continue working. Beck said as many Chicago officers as possible are working in cars alone, but he noted solo patrols can sometimes be dangerous. When officers must be partnered, he said the same people will work together as often as possible. We've always been more at risk for violence because of our profession, and now we have become at risk of virus because of our profession, Beck said. DeFranco was survived by his wife, two children, who are 7 and 10 years old. His brother also works for the same narcotics division. The searing loss is yet another reminder of the lethal danger of the COVID-19 and the danger it poses to our city, Lightfoot said. And now a note from the editorial section. Amid coronavirus, another worry looming for Illinois. The coronavirus pandemic has pushed many issues state lawmakers are facing to the back burner. The price of electricity shouldn't be one of them. That's why we're sounding this alarm that power bills for Northern Illinois ratepayers will shoot up soon if the legislature doesn't act. Last week, the company named PJM, which coordinates the movement of wholesale electricity in all or parts of 13 states and the District of Columbia, filed a so-called compliance plan under a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission order. The plan would have devastating consequences for Illinois consumers. If nothing is done, power bills will soar for ratepayers, job opportunities will be lost, and the environment will suffer enormous harm. The legislature can prevent that, though, by enacting legislation along the lines of the proposed Clean Energy Job Acts, but it has to get the job done before the end of the current legislative session. And this is a complicated bill that has lots of working parts. Because of the way energy markets work, if the legislature misses this opportunity, it won't get another crack at making a fix for years, possibly until 2025. Billions of dollars would be stunted to fossil fuel burning power plants. At least one nuclear power plant might shut down, and the growth of renewable energy sources would be slowed to a trickle. If that happens, it would be very difficult to get back even to the point where we are now. It would be helpful if we had more time to deal with this when there were so many issues related to coronavirus to consider, but we don't. Building on earlier legislation, the Clean Energy Jobs Act is designated to ramp up renewable energy, create jobs, assist economically challenged communities that are being hit hard by the effects of the coronavirus, and aid workers who are losing their jobs as coal-fired plants close. The bill also would allow the Illinois Power Agency to take over the management of the state's capacity market, a system set up to ensure states have enough energy capacity to meet peak loads. That would insulate Illinois from the Trump administration's effort to favor fossils over renewables. We know the governor and lawmakers have a lot on their plate right now, but the CEJA bill already was unnecessarily delayed when lawmakers thought they had plenty of time to deal with it. They don't anymore. The legislative session is set to end May 31st. Before I end out the reading today, just more information section says the COVID-19 24-hour hotline is 217-902-6100. The online screening tool is at https://carl.org/home/COVID-19-screening. We'll end today with a quick Dear Annie. Dear Annie, I'm wondering, what is the polite way to get out of a conversation after running into a friend while out at dinner? My husband and I are busy with a large family and many responsibilities, so we rarely go out. Going out to dinner together means we have to coordinate a night off, hire a sitter, etc. Frustratingly often, when we go out for one of these semi-rare date nights, we see someone we know while eating dinner. Without fail, they want to stay and visit. And a couple of times, they've even sat down with us and stayed for their meal. Date canceled. We've tried going out of town restaurants and even dropping strong hints, but they don't get it. This always happens when we have a special family meet out, like a birthday. Short of hiding under the table, what should we do? Wish I had a table for two. Dear WIHATFT, forget dropping hints. Exchange brief pleasantries and then be direct. There's no shame in simply saying, "We're on our date night." You can inject some humor if that's your style. Great running into you, but I've got a hot date here. Anyone who matters won't mind. Thanks for joining me for the commercial news for April 3rd. Stay safe and stay well out there.